Welcome to The Workplace, a podcast by Cal Chamber. I'm Erica Frank, Cal Chamber's General Counsel and Executive Vice President. And today on the podcast, we are fortunate to have Dr. Chris Thornburg of Beacon Economics joining us. Dr. Thornburg is founding partner of Beacon Economics and is an expert in economic and revenue forecasting, regional economics, economic policy, and labor and real estate markets. He's here today to talk about the coronavirus and the possible impact on the economy. Welcome, Dr. Thornburg.
Good morning.
Good morning. It's so nice to have you here and on such a timely topic.
Indeed, and I appreciate that. We probably ought to make the listeners aware of the fact that when we say Dr. Chris Thornburg, it's the PH fake kind of doctor, not the real kind of doctor. So if you're looking for medical advice, probably the wrong podcast. But hopefully I can help illuminate people a little bit about the potential economic consequences of what's going on right now.
I think that was a great clarifying point, especially since we're talking about the coronavirus, which continues to dominate the news. We had the president conducting a news conference over the weekend. We're seeing numbers escalate. And of course, there's a lot of fear and panic, not only among individuals for their own health reasons, but there definitely are economic impacts, and this is what we wanted to talk about today. So, Dr. Thornburg, what are the possible or likely economic impacts that the coronavirus may have on the economy right now?
Absolutely. And to sort of take it from the top down, I think you can say there's going to be two places in our economy where this thing is going to become apparent. The first is within demand for basic tourism and travel services. We know, of course, that people are canceling flights, they're canceling trips, they're canceling conferences, all because of, obviously, the fear of this contagion. The second part of this is going to be what I would call the supply chain influences. Now, supply chain influences can be as big as, wow, I'm having trouble getting parts from China because the Chinese economy isn't operating very effectively. But, of course, we need to take that to the next step now that we know it's here in the United States, talking about what it means for your particular workplace, your particular supply chain. As you have probably been hearing, whether it's Chicago, New York, or in the Washington State region, it's pretty clear the virus is spreading. And you may very well find that your employees are unwilling to come to work or may indeed come down with this and not be able to come to work. So there's two real sides of it, and I think that each one of these probably needs to be handled modestly differently.
So how would you handle, let's take it step by step then, with the tourism and the flights canceling?
Sure. Well, as already noted, there is obviously a substantial diminishment in demand for travel right now. And on that particular basis, we know that the airlines, some of the large hotels, conference centers, will almost undoubtedly find that their Q1 and potentially Q2 maybe end up being quite bad from a profit loss perspective. If your hotel isn't full, if the airline isn't full, these type of industries are industries that really rely on using a large portion of their available capacity to make money. And if that demand drops suddenly, that capacity isn't there and they go deeply into the red. The real question isn't, are these folks going to be hit, but rather how long? Mm-hmm. And I mean that in this particular way. It isn't necessarily the case that one or two bad quarters is going to cause a hotel or a airline to go bankrupt. They should all have enough cash and enough reserves to weather, if you will, a short run storm, whether it's 3 months, 6 months, somewhere in that particular range. Particularly after a decade of growth, companies ought to have the wherewithal to handle this kind of disruption. So from that perspective, I think that you're going to see some negative numbers. But I don't think it's going to be enough to cause massive layoffs or bankruptcies or other kind of disturbances within the financial markets, as long as, of course, it gets stopped within 6 months. Now, on that particular front, I feel like we're in relatively good territory. If you look at what's happening in China, they're already over the hump, and it's been really about 6 to 8 weeks since this thing became apparent. That suggests with aggressive government interaction, we can actually control this thing relatively quickly to prevent any kind of long-term harm. As for overall harm in the economy, let's keep in mind that if people aren't spending money on airlines, if they're not spending on money on tour and travelism, they're going to do one of two things. They're going to tuck that money to one side and spend it in the second half of the year, which will help, of course, all those travel companies. And equivalently, they may very well turn around and spend it on something else. And on that basis, you know, I want to go back to probably a reasonably equivalent period of time that happened just about 20 years ago now, and that was right after September 11th. Obviously a horrible tragedy when those 3,000 plus people died because of the attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. But if you go back and look in time what happened afterwards, there was a substantial decline in travel and tourism, but the economy did okay. In fact, we were in the midst of a recovery from the tech downturn. And that, again, is because people simply spent their money somewhere else inside the economy. What it means is definitely some tough straits for people in the travel and tourism industry. But overall, I don't see this, at least, again, as long as it's a relatively short-run effect, as being a recession-causing type event, not in its own right. And in a very real way, you know, when you think about the easy transmission of this virus from person to person, you may very well find that the more people, say, decide not to travel, go to conferences, do the other things that may hurt in the short run, the better off we're going to be in the long run. So in other words, the first half of the year, which is deeply in the red for some airlines and hotel companies, may be exactly what we want to see in order to make sure that the second half of the year we go deeply into the black because we've gotten rid of this virus for once and for all.
So people get healthy where it's tough right now in the short term, but in the long term, we're going to be better off because folks are going to actually have that money tucked away to go ahead and spend it elsewhere to help bolster the economy where we might see some deficits.
That's exactly right. So we'll see that bounce back and again, short-term disruption, but no long-term impact. And a way to think about this yet once more time is, again, to remember that it's an aggregate demand shock that causes recessions when people simply pull back on spending overall.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't an aggregate demand shock. This is a shift in demand away from things like tourism and travel towards other parts of the economy. And again, on net, you're going to see us the economy, while taking a hit, certainly not a big enough hit at this point in time to cause some sort of global downturn.
So, Chris, in looking at the big picture, I think that there's a lot of calm here or cold comfort to the extent that, yes, there could be some downturn in the immediate future, but that's going to boomerang back once we get control and everyone starts to spend again and decide to go on their trips that they had postponed. But what about for those small businesses and companies? And you touched upon it just briefly when we first started talking, as far as employees choosing to stay home because either they are concerned that they might contract the virus or they themselves have similar symptoms and are heeding warnings by the CDC and their even maybe their employer to say, if you're not feeling well, please stay home. Sort of the spiraling impact that this might have where all of a sudden the employees aren't there to churn out the products that consumers may otherwise be demanding now that they are not going on their trips and have this extra income to spend.
Right. And that's the supply chain effects. Again, a little different than the tourism and travel effects. And here, I think we have to be a little bit more cautious because if this thing really does get out into the general population, I mean, look what happened in China where factories literally shut down for a month or 6 weeks. And under those sort of circumstances, there is going to be a substantial amount of stress, particularly among small business, as you point out. Look, large companies will be able to borrow their way through this. They'll be able to extract reserves, if you will. But a lot of small companies, a lot of mom-and-pop companies simply don't have that kind of wherewithal. They don't have access to credit. They may not be able to just muddle through this, right? They may find themselves falling behind in payments and everything else. And we have to worry about that because obviously a shock to that part of the system could create not only some financial disruptions, but yet again, create some real economic turbulence in the U.S. economy. Now, again, how bad this will incredibly depend on how long it goes on. one of the good bits of news here, if there's any, is that this has in fact happened in Q1 of 2020. You know, we don't really think about it too much, but every single year the U.S. economy goes into a recession in Q1. Mm. Q4, of course, Christmas and the holiday season is always crazy busy. Companies are running at full blast getting through that holiday season. And then every single year there's a pretty substantial decline in economic activity in Q1. Now, you don't see it in the data because economists like to seasonally adjust to better track more long-run trends. But every year from Q4 to Q1, there's about a 7% decline in overall national output. But again, it doesn't have any impact on us because we're all used to it. We're all ready for it. Everybody's prepared for it. And so, therefore, it doesn't matter much. But, of course, what it also means is because we're not in the busiest of times, this disruption to supply chains may have a little less effect than it might otherwise. Again, I'm going to go back to the idea that that's going to critically depend on how long this goes. If this bleeds a little bit into the second quarter, I'm still going to be okay. I'm still not too worried about it. But if we don't get in front of it, if we don't handle it appropriately, and it gets into Q3, that's when it's time to pull out the worry beads. Because that's the point in time when this really will start to have an impact on overall economic growth, and could actually start to create the kind of disruption that may, I'm not saying it will, but could actually lead to a recession-type scenario. So we're in wait-and-see mode, but I'm going to go back to what it means from a policy perspective. Everybody should appreciate that short-run pain is going to lead to long-run gain. It's incredibly important for us not to worry about the right now. Don't tell people to come to work because, gee, I got to get this product out. I have to finish up this important report. Ultimately, you're going to do more harm than good by creating a situation where this disease can start to spread out of control. For any company that can, you need to start making plans right now for how people can work remotely. How can you set it up that people don't necessarily have to come in every single day? If they're not feeling well, if you feel that there's a chance that the contagion could be spread within your company, better to have people at home, better to figure out how to have them work from there. Yes, there may be some short-run loss of productivity, but ultimately, we're going to be better off. And the same goes with government. One of the things we learned from China is that simply quarantining a large portion of the population, while draconian at some level, is also effective in containing this thing. And here in America, we're going to be a little more uncomfortable with that. Mm-hmm. We're not used to a heavy-handed government. We're used to a government that really respects our rights. But right now, of course, that could be a situation which will create more problems than necessarily good. So we may have to all sit on our hands and allow the government to, yes, constrain what we do and how we do it for a little bit, because the quicker we get in front of this, the less impact it's going to have overall.
Well, Dr. Thornburg, I appreciate that, and I feel like we've provided a little silver lining to what is otherwise a very dangerous and potentially harmful situation. So I think that despite the fears and concerns that are legitimate, there is some positive things to take away from what's happening to the economy and to the nation right now.
Yes, and I think that's a great point. Let me follow up with that with two quick thoughts. First of all, look, we know as we see these growth in these dense urban centers that the potential for these kind of contagions increases every single year. So the quicker we figure this out, that we have systems in place to prevent or at least control the next one, the better off we're going to be. Let's be glad that, say, relative to SARS and MERS, this thing has a much lower fatality rate. It's teaching us a good lesson. And hopefully we'll come that way with this a little bit smarter. Now, that's the upside. Here's another thought, and that has to do with the stock market. As you know, you've seen a massive sell-off in equities, and I think that that's one of the reasons that people are getting so panicked. But keep in mind, it was a year ago today when the markets were down 20%. And that time, of course, everybody was panicked about a real estate downturn and another recession. As we know, of course, those fears turned out to be basically nothing. 2019 was a perfectly reasonable year for economic activity, And all those fears, of course, ended up going away, and the market leapt to two new high levels really by the middle of the year. Well, this time around, I believe the stock market's overreacting as well. So don't look at those big decline in equities and think they tell you anything. They really don't. It's just more crazy fear from an overreactive stock market. Put that to one side, focus on the real issues, and you'll see that overall, this isn't all that bad. And I expect with the right decisions, we're going to get out of it without much of an overall impact.
This is great news. Thank you, Dr. Thornburg. One last little nugget for our listeners. What would be the best advice you can provide for companies who are trying to make sense of all of the news reports and everything that they're hearing out there as it relates to the coronavirus?
Yes, and I think the answer there is take this seriously, but don't take it that seriously. Of course, what I mean on the first point is you take this seriously. Have systems in place. Make sure your employees are taking precautionary measures. Make sure you have in-house everything from bottles of Purell in every corner to allow people to take care of themselves. And again, make sure that people understand if you feel at all unhealthy, stay home. But don't take it too seriously. Don't shut your company down. Don't think about canceling investments. Understand that with the right aggressive action, this is going to go away relatively quickly. And by the second half of the year, you're going to be up and running and really catching up with all the business that you may have missed in the first part of the year. So again, stay calm, carry on.
Fabulous. And thank you for joining us on The Workplace. Please comment, share, and subscribe to Cal Chambers Podcast by visiting calchamber.com.